What's going on, everybody? And good morning. Today is Friday, June 26th, and this is your daily Go Birds Morning Update, giving you all the Eagles news you need to know, as well as what to keep an eye out for today. And it's Friday. The weekend is here. Unfortunately, seems like the weather's not going to be great this weekend. Again, had the pickleball practice ready to go this week. We'll see if the Make-A-Wish Foundation pickleball tournament happens on Saturday. If not, you should go check out the website. The great work Connor Barwin does, built multiple parks around the city. Awesome guy, been a part of the community. Go check his website out and his charity if you can. But hopefully, the game happens on Saturday, and I report to you back on Monday with details about how it goes. I had someone in the Go Birds insider group suggest a name for me and Pat Gallen, and it was the Wonderwall, which is actually pretty good because we both saw Oasis again. No big deal to me. I did see them three times, but that's good. Like defense, like I feel like it makes sense. Wonderwall, obviously the Oasis song. We went with Champagne Super Servers. Feel like that's pretty good, pretty creative, happy with it. Hopefully we get a chance to get out there and in play. But maybe you don't super care about my pickleball tournament. So let's get your Friday going with some Eagles news. And let's start with the Bryce Huff podcast interview. So a clip goes viral yesterday, and it's Bryce Huff on a pod. It's called the Caps Off Pod. And it's probably like 50 seconds. And I'm not going to lie, like the pod, I think, did Bryce a little dirty with how they edited this. So they put out a clip in there, and it's Bryce basically saying, you know, the fans weren't great when he was in Philly. It didn't work out. It's like a 50-second clip. But I wanted to go through and play what Bryce actually said in the podcast interview. And I'll say this, as much as I'm joking about the pod doing him dirty, like it was a good interview. The podcast host asked good questions. You could tell Bryce Huff was comfortable. I was around Bryce Huff for a full year. I've never heard him talk at this length. Like I talked to Bryce a bunch one-on-one, and it was always pretty short answers, which I think plays into just how comfortable he felt there, which we'll get into in a minute. So basically in the podcast interview, Bryce Huff, he talks about a bunch of different things. It's Jets days, all those things. So Bryce Huff starts the Eagles part of it talking about what went wrong in Philadelphia and how he just felt off right from the jump. So here's Bryce Huff on the Caps Off Pod. I'm going to play like the meat of this. So it's a little bit of a long clip, but I want you to hear all of it and everything he had to say. So here's Bryce Huff on that.
Come out later on, but you had said that the Philly stint was off from the get-go. Bryce Huff, as someone that goes to Philly, signs a huge deal with them. At what point did you know vibes were off, this shit wasn't going to work?
Like, first week of camp.
Why was that?
So we had done, like, walkthroughs without pads on. Mm-hmm. And really OTAs, honestly. I knew it was kind of off.
Yeah.
Because we went in and we didn't do any pass rush drills the entire OTAs. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just, like, dropping in coverage. So I'm like, they brought me here to rush, but, like, all we're doing the entire camp or all spring camp was just like dropping in coverage and learning coverages. So I thought that was weird. And then we get to camp before we even put on pads. It's like first week of camp, DC goes in the media is like, I don't think he can stop the run. I don't think he has what it takes to do the job right now.
Yeah.
And the fans ate it up. Like they just lost it.
Yeah.
And I, like me being like an undrafted guy, never having people talk to me about whatever, like fans were always supportive in New York, to go there and everybody's just like grilling me before we even put pads on. Like, bro, what are we on right now? Like, that was just weird.
Yeah.
And on top of that, we had like this rush package for me. And like second week of camp, they had taken the package out.
Yeah.
So it was literally like just sending speed rushes on the edge and hope to get home. I don't know, bro. This is a lot of things. Lack of communication between the interior and exterior rushers. Like, and being in New York, we had always been in the same room.
Yeah.
So we were always on this, like, we had, like, one mind out there. Like, we were out there freestyling, calling our own stunts, calling our own rushes, New York. And then to go there, like, zero chemistry, zero confluence between the exterior and interior. So it was just, I just knew it was off. And then, like, me being, like, the new guy in there, I didn't want to, like, looking back, I probably should have been more outspoken about it, but I didn't want to come in and just start like, yo, what are we doing? Like, fix this, fix that, you know, because I wanted to like trust the process.
Yeah, of course. But like, you also like being the, like you just said, being the new one in the room. You're like, the last thing I want to be like, let's do this, let's do that. Let me fall in line, obviously. For sure. You know?
So it was kind of weird. But as the first half of the season went on, I started to get into a little rhythm. In the first game that I feel like it kind of clicked, which was the Giants game, I come out, I got a sack in the first half. I probably could have had two or three in the first half. And then I think like the probably like the last play of the second quarter, I tore my wrist.
Week 9, I think?
I'm not sure.
I think it was like midway through the season.
It was midway. Yeah. I tore my wrist halfway. And then after that, it was just kind of weird. I don't even want to get into like the specifics just because like...
You don't need to.
Yeah, I don't...
There's no upside.
Care to,
So in there, he says, felt off right away. And I think everybody would agree with that. And even like in training camp, and he brings up the Vic Fangio part where Fangio rips his defense. Here's what I would say, and I'm going to both defend Bryce during this and then kind of poke some holes in what he said. So the first is he says in OTAs, they're only practicing dropping back into coverage. Now, if you remember when they signed Bryce Huff, he was basically only a third down player. He didn't really play on first and second down. His run defense was not considered good. He was a pass rush specialist. Like that is what he did. And he was coming off a year in New York where he had had a good year getting after the quarterback, but wasn't good against the run. If I remember correctly, Robert Saleh, the head coach at the time, compared him to I think it was Mariano Rivera, basically being like, this guy is a specialist. This is what he does. The Eagles gave him money to be a three down player, and that didn't happen. And so we've talked about this on the pod about how it was a good example of the front office and the coaching staff maybe not being on the same page of like, hey, we're going to give this guy enough money where he needs to be on the field on three downs. And the coaching staff thinking, well, he can't play first and second down because he's not good against the run. So I don't think Vic Fangio was wrong to consider that he couldn't put this guy out on the field on running downs, right? Where I think Bryce has a point is Vic Fangio saying this publicly to the media benefited nobody. Like maybe he's trying to motivate Bryce. Obviously, that didn't work well. I think there is something, and James says this all the time, about how some people are attaboys, right? Where you get them to be better by encouraging them. And some people respond well to this, to like public criticism. And, you know, Adoree Jackson last year was publicly criticized by Vic. He seemed to handle it well. He ends up having a decent year. Vic criticizes Bryce Huff, and obviously Bryce did not like it. You can hear that when he talks about it. So I think it was a mistake by Vic Fangio to criticize Bryce that way and to basically make this a public thing where now everybody's talking about his run defense. Because I remember being there. It became like a huge story. So I do understand where Bryce felt the Vic Fangio thing was probably not fair. The dropping back into coverage in OTAs, to me, I don't know what he expected to do. Like, you don't have pads on. You're not really doing 11 on 11. And dropping back into coverage is part of what Vic Fangio asks of his defensive ends. Now, again, Bryce did not do that with New York, right? And he came to Philadelphia, and he was asked to do it. So that's just another thing where I think you can blame the team almost more than Bryce for signing a player that had a very clear skill set and then asking him to do things that were not part of that skill set. So Bryce got paid a lot of money. I will say from being around him, he didn't seem very happy in Philly the whole time. And I think from the jump, he says that it felt off, right? So maybe, and I think it's probably fair to criticize Bryce for not attacking these new challenges head on. You know, like he was paid a lot of money to try new things, and those things did not go well for him. And the way he talks, it sounds he was just like morally demoralized from getting there and how bad it went from the jump. And he says he didn't handle it well. And that's something that is not in the podcast clip that was tweeted out. Bryce takes responsibility, right? He says, I didn't handle it well. I should have spoken up about things. He says in there about how the defensive tackle and the edge room weren't on the same page because they were in different rooms. I think this is an instance where there can be truth to that, right? Maybe Bryce felt he wasn't getting communication from the defensive tackles. I'm sure other edge players probably felt that way. But also, the results are the results. And the result was the defense in 2024 was awesome. So it's hard for me to say that was some big problem Bryce identified that needs fixed. Like, the Eagles have a defensive tackle coach and they have an edge coach and they meet in different rooms. And there's times where the lines meet together, right? So I think Bryce got to a new situation from New York, and things were very different. He was asked to do different things. He was criticized publicly, and the whole week-to-week, like Monday through Saturday setup for him was different as well. So that's definitely a big part of it. So I think Bryce takes responsibility in there and is just honest. Like, it wasn't a good fit. So the other part that went viral was him talking about the Super Bowl and how he felt about it. So here is Bryce Huff talking about having a Super Bowl ring and not playing in the Super Bowl and how he looks at that ring.
I mean, it was a cool experience, but like for me, like being going through that, well, like the situation that I did and like not being up for that game.
Yeah.
I just, like, it doesn't mean too much to me. It's cool to have, like, it's cool to say like I was part of a Super Bowl winning team, but yeah, like I didn't play. Like, I'm gonna call it spade a spade. Like,
yeah.
And I didn't play for the second half of the season, you know, and the way that went down, like me finding out that I wasn't playing, mm-hmm. I lost so much respect for the people involved in that. Yeah. So, but it is what it is.
Well, we'll put aside the Eagles talk yeah, and talk yeah. about something more positive, which is the Niners, right? So then you get traded.
So I'll be honest, the first thing I thought when I heard this was, how does Carson Wentz feel about his Super Bowl ring? Now, Carson played a big role in helping them get there, and the way that he was an elite quarterback for 13 weeks or whatever it was, helped them get close to the one seed, the division, all those things. So he might look at it differently. But I also think there is a reality that when you don't play in that Super Bowl, you view the ring differently, especially if you were expected to play. Like, if you were a practice squad player all year or a backup and you don't play, you're fine with that. You're aware of what your role was. Bryce Huff was signed and given a lot of money to be an impact player. The defensive line goes off in that game and he doesn't get to play. So I don't blame him for feeling that way. I think what's in there is the communication part of it. Vic and Bryce Huff just did not seem to get along. I think that was very clear being around the team. That was very clear when you would, you know, I would ask Bryce questions about Vic Fangio, the in between the line stuff. And here, like, Vic has strengths as a coordinator. Obviously, he's one of the best coordinators of all time. I don't think Vic's strength is communication with his players and, like, I can't think of the right word here, like placating to a player's emotions. Like, Vic has a way he does things. Now, the results are the results, and how Vic does things works. I don't think that means every part of how Vic Fangio does his job is perfect. I don't think anybody is perfect at their job, even if the results are amazing. So I think this is an instance where they gave a lot of money to somebody, Bryce Huff, and the organization, I don't think, handled it well. And I don't think Bryce handled it well either. But I think from the jump, it was obvious these two were not a match. Now, Bryce Huff and his team, by that I mean like his representation, also probably deserve blame for not doing more research on how he was going to be used before he got there. So that is part of it too. But it just is very clear, like, I don't think Vic handled it well. I think there was poor communication between the front office and the coaching staff on how the player was going to be used, and that's part of it, right? But he also says in the interview how Howie was very good throughout the whole thing. He calls Howie a real one. He says the way Howie communicated, he appreciated. And I'm sure that's true, because Howie's the one that gave him all the money. So I think that was good to hear about Howie. One thing you do hear from players is Howie definitely has their back, and that's good as a GM. But the communication was off. So the other part, and I think this is where fans definitely got riled up, was Bryce Huff talking about the fans. And I think the way it was portrayed in the clip is not really what Bryce said. So here's what Bryce Huff had to say about playing in Philadelphia and the fans.
I mean, for the fans, especially like Philly, having that, they like take pride in going after people.
So they're assholes.
Yeah.
They take pride in being assholes.
For sure. But I mean, behind the scenes, things definitely do get a bit more intricate. But yeah. I do, like, I got love for the guys in the building, like, mm-hmm. locker room. Like, all my teammates were lit. Howie was a real one the whole time I was there. Like,
it's best GM in football.
Ups and downs, like, Howie was a real one for sure. I'll say that much. But yeah, I mean, when it comes to ball, like, it just didn't work out.
So you can hear, and the podcast host says at one point in the interview that his father-in-law and the family he married into are huge Eagles fans. So the guy kind of says, like, Philly fans take pride in being tough. And so Bryce agrees with that and kind of like just agrees with what the guy is saying and says it is like a prideful thing, much like if Eagles fans were to say, hey, we know we're tough, right? And like Eagles fans take pride in that. But here's the other part, and this is where I will defend Bryce a little bit. Not everybody is meant to play in Philadelphia. And if you are an athlete that has high expectations and it goes as horribly as it does for Bryce Huff, it's an incredibly tough place to play. Eagles fans online are incredibly tough and can be very mean. And when you are Bryce Huff and you're new to a city, it's not going well, you're probably not enjoying going to work, and you're just getting shredded online, of course you're not going to enjoy that. Now, I understand from the fans' perspective, like, what are you going to say? I mean, I think there's a larger discussion about just how people talk to people online. But regardless, I'm not saying the fans should have given like a standing ovation for Bryce Huff, but I'm sure that Bryce Huff did not enjoy the way Philly fans talked about him. And it can be really, really hard to be an Eagles player. It's extremely difficult. Like, if you are winning, it's unbelievable. If you're struggling, like kind of how Nick Castellanos and the fans had back and forth, right? Like, it's awful. It's awful to be an Eagles player when you're not playing well. It's awful to be Nick Sirianni when it's not going well. It's awful to be Jalen Hurts, although he seems kind of very good at blocking it all out. But regardless, there are moments, long moments, like full seasons, where it is terrible to be an Eagles player. That's just the reality. But when it's awesome, it's unbelievable. And the players get to enjoy what it's like to win in a major market. But when Bryce Huff says the fans were tough on him, yeah, he's right. Now, could he have done a better job blocking it out? Maybe. Could, you know, all those things, right? But I think any fan that says, like, Bryce Huff is talking trash about the fans or blah, 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 like, he's agreeing with what the guy says and just being like, yeah, it was tough. And he takes responsibility at points of that interview. So my overall take from the interview was it clearly was just not a good fit between Bryce and the Eagles. I think he acknowledges that. I think he takes blame for part of that. I think he points out the things he didn't like, which I can understand him not liking those. And I also think it's a very good lesson in how when you sign a player or draft a player, the person is a huge part of it. Like, how good a player is matters, how fast he is, how good he is at catching the football, throwing the football, like attacking the football, all those matter. But you are investing in a person. And Jalen Hurts is a great example of that. I think people would mostly agree Jalen, while he clearly is one of the most gifted humans in the world at football, look at what he's accomplished. He doesn't have like the rocket arm, the 4.2, 4.3 speed, but because of who he is as a person, he's really accomplished a ton. Devontae Smith, AJ Brown, Saquon Barkley, like AJ obviously had his moments, but these are guys that were able to handle Philadelphia and also handle the toughness of playing for the Eagles and thrive in it. Bryce Huff, I don't think it's a fault of his. I don't think it makes him a bad person. I don't think it makes him a weak person. He was not a match for Philadelphia. And so when the Eagles talk about finding people in the draft that are Philly, that can handle Philly and that can be Eagles, I think this is what they're talking about. And it's something they have to deal with that other teams don't. It's easy to go be a Jacksonville Jaguar. It's easy to go be an Arizona Cardinal. When the Eagles invest highly in a person, they need to make sure they can handle the market. And so I think that's what you saw with Bryce Huff. Like, he came into a situation that he was not able to handle. The team had fault. He had fault. It snowballed. It got ugly. It seems like it really impacted him during the season. I can't blame him. Like, there are days where I don't like to check my Twitter mentions, right? And like, it impacts me like 4 or 5 days. Those things happen when you have a lot of people talking about you. So I understand Bryce's side. I understand the Eagle side. And I think this can be a learning lesson for both the player, now he's retired, and the team. Like, the Bryce Huff thing is something they can really learn from. And I think that they have, and I think that they've drafted better and all those things. But the fit of a player really, really matters. And they got that part wrong, in my opinion, when it came to the Bryce Huff signing and just the person and all that. It just was not a fit. All right. On the other side, we'll talk about something unrelated to Bryce Huff, since he has not been on the team now for a while and won't be. Let's see how the rest of the league views the Philadelphia Eagles. So that'll be on the other side. But first, a word from our sponsors. Okay, so If you're a Daily Pod listener, you know I enjoy the perspective of people that, A, I might disagree with, but also people that aren't super, super in the market, right? Like the national perspective on the team. Because while we can really focus on, do they have a great backup tackle? Do they have a great second safety? The national perspective is much more like, how do the Eagles stack up to other teams around the league? So recently, PhillyVoice.com did a good job rounding up different power rankings on the Eagles from around the league. And so I wanted to take a look at that, give you guys a perspective of how people view the Eagles and some thoughts on how people do view the Eagles and if I agree or disagree with it. So the first one up is USA Today. This is writer Nate Davis, and they have the Eagles the lowest of all the power rankings that Philly Voice cited, and they have the Eagles at 12. So ahead of the Eagles in order from 1 through 11, the Rams, the Seahawks, the 49ers, the Broncos, the Bills, the Patriots, the Bears, the Texans, the Bengals, the Lions, and the Ravens. So what they say about the Eagles is, quote, the A.J. Brown drama is over, focus to shift to Jalen Hurts and a new offense and how well the quarterback and his revamped receiving corps acclimate to it, end quote. So yeah, I mean, a big part of this season is going to be how the offense does. I think they have a good enough defense where they could win 7, 8, 9 games simply off that alone. And with the offense being even average, they'll probably get to 10, 11, 12 wins. But yeah, how they acclimate to the offense is a big part of it. My biggest takeaway from having the Eagles 12th is seems low, right? So the first three all being NFC West teams, all that the Eagles play, that's pretty tough, right? Rams, Seahawks, 49ers, all top three. 49ers being third seems strong to me. I know they dealt with injuries last year, but you know, they won one playoff game. They got absolutely demolished by Seattle. It just seems a little strong. They have not won a Super Bowl, so I don't know if they get the kind of credit maybe the Eagles do in terms of assuming they'll be great. But they are good consistently, and I'm fine with them being in the top seven, whatever. Three just seems strong. All three being in from the same division, it's brutal. As always, tough to be a Cardinals fan. But the Broncos, Bills, Patriots, I can get down with that. I could see them being ahead of the Eagles. Where I would disagree is with the Texans and the Bengals. So the Texans, obviously an elite defense, good team last year. I think they have more quarterback questions than the Eagles do. So it's hard for me to view the Texans as a great team when I don't know if they have a good quarterback. At least with Jalen, I know the floor is somewhat high. With CJ Stroud, he had a really down year last year. So the Texans being that high, to me, I would disagree with that. The Bengals, I mean, at what point do they need to make the playoffs to be viewed as a great team? I know they had a Super Bowl run a few years ago, but they've been mostly irrelevant the past few years. So the Bengals being that high to me, I just disagree with. I think Joe Burrow needs to prove he can stay healthy and they need to make the playoffs before I view them as a great team. The Lions and the Ravens, I think the Eagles are better, but I'm fine with that for the most part. So I would put the Eagles in the top 10, which USA does not have them. Now, most other rankings agree with me that the Eagles should be in the top 10. So ESPN has the Eagles 5th. They have the Seahawks, Rams, Broncos, and Bills ahead of them. I think that's all fair. And our good buddy, local beat writer Tim McManus, wrote the Eagles kind of wrote what they think about the Eagles. And he wrote, quote, the most action has been at receiver for the Eagles after drafting Mekhi Lemon, trading for Dontavian Wicks, and signing Hollywood Brown and Elijah Moore. But that's in part about trying to offset the expected departure of A.J. Brown, which has happened. Similarly, they acquired edge Jonathan Grenard, but lost Jalen Phillips in free agency. At tight end, meanwhile, Philly selected Eli Stowers in the second round and inked Johnny Mutt and Stone Smart to one-year contracts. Add the re-signing of Dallas Goedert, and the Eagles have built out a talented tight ends room with more diverse skill sets than a year ago. End quote. So I'm not sure they have a much more diverse skill set than a year ago. They might have better players 1 through 5, but Johnny Munt's really the only one that you say can definitely be on the field for receiving and blocking downs. And obviously, I think Goddard too, but I'm talking about behind Goddard. Like, Calcaterra's back. He has the same skill set. Stone Smart, not viewed as a great blocker. Eli Stowers is a pass-catching, essentially receiver coming in the NFL that has to learn tight end. So I don't really agree that they have a more diverse set of players at tight end, which we'll see how it plays out. But if they don't, then that's kind of a failure of Howie Roseman, who made it pretty clear that he wanted to have a more diverse skill set. I just don't know if he accomplished it. So excited in training camp to see what happens. But I don't think they have a much more diverse skill set than they did a year ago at tight end. The Ringer has the Eagles 6th. This is writer Deontay Lee. They have the Eagles behind the Rams, Seahawks, Broncos, Bills, and Texans. Again, disagree with Texans, but the Rams, Seahawks, Broncos, and Bills seem to be a pretty steady group of teams that are going ahead of the Eagles here. Deontay Lee writes, quote, "Last year was a disaster, but this should be a championship caliber team. They still have one of the most talented and complete rosters in football with several Pro Bowl caliber players on both sides of the ball, and they have a legendary defensive coordinator in Vic Fangio. And the Eagles will finally be trying out the Shanahan-McVay offense with new play caller Sean Mannion. Whether this team can deliver on its championship-level talent will come down to quarterback Jalen Hurts. Once A.J. Brown is traded, a move that's expected in early June," so again, this has happened, "Hurts will need to prove himself as a quarterback who can truly elevate the play of all his teammates, operating an above-average passing game without needing multiple otherworldly talents at receiver. If Hurts is up to the challenge, Philadelphia could be right back at the top of the NFC again." End quote. Yeah, if the offense is awesome, the Eagles are going to be awesome. Now, I think the key part there is with new play caller Sean Mannion. We talked about this last week, remember the week before on the pod, about how, you know, first year coordinators don't often do great, right? And so there will be growing pains with Sean Mannion. So the offense, this is similar to, you know, what I said a few minutes ago, like they will dictate if this team is like a 13 win team or a 9 win team. I think that's the bar there for the Eagles. If the Eagles offense can be top 12, they'll be a great team. If they are 20th again, then I think you'll see them compete or like struggle to win the division. I think they'll make the playoffs either way. I'd be pretty surprised if they didn't, but they could definitely go into the playoffs as a team that's, you know, not viewed as a legitimate Super Bowl contender. And the highest the Eagles were on any of these rankings were Fox Sports has them 4th. They write, quote, "Take out 3 games against the NFC West teams and their schedule is soft as butter. Also, they get their toughest games at home, Rams, Seahawks, and by the time they travel to San Francisco, the frequent traveling 49ers should be exhausted," end quote. So I think their schedule, the opponents are very manageable. I don't think the schedule makers did the Eagles any favors in terms of getting luck or any in terms of getting an easy stretch, getting teams off the rest, anything like that. But the point is true about the Niners. The Eagles do go to San Francisco, but they'll be coming off of playing on Christmas Eve, so they will have an extended break there before they travel out west. And the Niners have a ton of travel this year, including a trip to Australia. And I actually think they play in another international game as well. So they have a ton going on with the Niners. By the time they play them, I believe it's week 16, it could be a huge game for like the number one seed in the NFC. Or the Niners could have really dealt with injuries again. They could be dealing with the struggles of having a lot of road trips, tough road trips. And maybe this is a game the Eagles go into as 4.5, 5-point favorites. But it'll be interesting to find out. I will say reading this, like, man, I can't wait for the season to get started. And by that, I mean training camp. But when you hear about traveling to San Francisco, it makes me think about all the trips that we're going to have fun on this year, right? Like the fans of Philly trips to Tennessee, Chicago, San Francisco, London. Like, it's going to be a sick year of hanging out with Eagles fans. So that'll do it for today's Daily Go Birds pod. Go out, enjoy your weekend. Until next time. He's Elliot. I'm James. Talk to you guys later.